Welcome to Tardi Mecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Sivi Zuckerman, and today we'll be learning Parshas Pinchas. Many people feel a connection to the schools they attended. The values and perspectives they encountered there often continue to shape them long after they've left. According to the Mishnah in Avos, however, there are two schools that influence us far more profoundly than any alma mater. Whether we realize it or not, we're all students in either the Academy of Avram Avinu or the Academy of the Wicked Bilam. What does that mean? So let's explore this idea based on the teachings of Rav Moshe Shapiro. The Mishnah identifies three traits that characterize Avram's students: an ayin tova, a good eye, a ruach nemucha, a humble spirit, and a nefesh shefela, a lowly soul. And Bilam students possess the opposite qualities: an ayin ra'a, an evil eye, a ruach gavoha, a haughty spirit, and a nefesh rechava, a greedy soul. These are not simply contrasting personality traits. They reflect two fundamentally different ways of relating to the world. The Mishnah elsewhere refers to the core drives of kinetiv and kavod, jealousy, desire, and the pursuit of honor. And Rav Shlomo Volba explains that when a person becomes consumed by these drives, he loses touch with his own inner world and becomes disconnected from himself. But when those same drives are elevated and directed properly, they become tools for growth, connection, and transcendence. Avram and Bilam, therefore, represent far more than two historical figures. They embody two opposing worldviews. Avram represents the Torah's vision of a life built on humility, connection, and purpose, and Bilam represents a life centered on self-interest and self-gratification. And that clash of worldviews lies at the heart of this week's Parsha. The Jewish people are still reeling from the events at Shittim, the events of Baal Peor. At Bilam's advice, Balak succeeded where the curses had failed, and the nation became entangled in both idolatry and immorality, and a devastating plague followed. These competing worldviews are important not only for understanding Parshas Pinchas, but they help us understand the broader story of Sefer Bamidbar. The Jewish people are standing at a pivotal moment in their history. They're preparing to leave behind the miraculous existence of the desert and enter Eretz Yisrael. They'll build a society rooted in Torah values. But to appreciate that mission, we first need to understand the worldview that they were meant to challenge. The universal religious framework of the ancient world was paganism, which was fundamentally transactional. People tried to appease powerful and vengeful gods in the hope of getting what they wanted: prosperity, protection, fertility, or victory. What was largely absent from this worldview was the idea of relationship. There was no loving God with whom one could form a connection. Human beings saw themselves as living at the mercy of arbitrary forces beyond their control. And when people believe that life is governed by unpredictable fate, certain attitudes tend to follow naturally. They become very focused on protecting themselves, securing resources, and getting ahead. And at the same time, they try to maximize pleasure and personal benefit while they can. Perhaps the society that most clearly embodied this worldview was Sodom, a culture built on selfishness, immorality, and an institutionalized perversion of justice. Now, it's tempting to view the ancient world as primitive and assume that we're much more sophisticated than that. But in many respects, the similarities to modern society are striking. Many people today live with little awareness of a loving God actively involved in their lives, and science and technology can create a sense of control, but they can eliminate uncertainty, vulnerability, or the countless factors that remain beyond their control. As a result, anxiety, competition, and self-protection are really defining features of modern life as well. And if life is ultimately about surviving in an indifferent universe, then the logical response is to enjoy whatever pleasures you can while you can. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. A friend of mine, who has by no means lived a sheltered life, once attended a medical conference in a city not particularly known for its modesty. And she told me that she walked through the streets and she found herself thinking, this must have been what Sodom was like. Against that backdrop, Avram's message was nothing short of revolutionary. He stood as a lone voice in a world built on self-interest and fear. He taught that there's a loving God who created the world with purpose and meaning. He taught that life is not about grabbing whatever we can before it's gone, but about building relationships with Hashem and with other people. And it was that worldview that the Jewish people were charged with carrying into the world. When Hashem promised Avram that his descendants would one day inherit Eretz Yisrael and build a society rooted in these values, that promise was tied directly to Bris Milah, to circumcision. Because, as the Ramban explains, Bris Milah represents the channeling of human desire toward purpose within the framework of committed loving relationship. Although Avram's views were unpopular, to say the least, his worldview was rooted in the very structure of creation itself. If you look closely at the first words in the Torah, Bereshis bara Elokim es hashamayim v'es haaretz, in the beginning, Hashem created the heavens and the earth, you see that everything begins with relationship, heaven and earth, giving and receiving. Heaven is the source of giving, Hashem's flow downward, and earth is the vessel of receiving, open, dependent, responsive, life-producing. Creation is built on relationship because the goal is that we as receivers come into connection with Hashem, the ultimate giver. But here's the tragedy. Human beings take that same system and invert it. Hashem gives us drives, abilities, energy, creativity, and instead of using them to build relationship, we redirect them towards self, toward gratification without connection or transactional giving. This inversion is especially evident in the twin sins of idolatry and immorality. There's a tradition that the Vilna Gaon had that whenever the Jewish people sinned in idolatry, it was accompanied by a breach in moral boundaries. In fact, the term for immorality, znus, is also used to describe idolatry. So in what way are these two so deeply connected? Idolatry at its core is an attempt to bypass relationship. It's the desire to access the stuff that I want, children, money, success, without investing in the vulnerability, the growth, and the commitment that's needed for a real relationship with Hashem. The same distortion exists with immorality, pursuing pleasure without the commitment and the selfless giving that real connection requires. In both cases, it's about getting the stuff I want without the relationship. And when that inversion becomes dominant, it undermines the very fabric of creation. And that's why Baal Peor, which combined both idolatry and immorality, led the nation to the brink of destruction, as the Torah itself indicates at the beginning of Parshas Pinchas, saying that if it hadn't been for Pinchas, the Jewish people would have been wiped out. Another way to understand this distortion is by looking at the relationship between pleasure and purpose. The Meshech Chachma explains that the first mitzvah given to man was actually to eat from all the trees in the Garden of Eden. This indicates that all the mitzvos are about experiencing pleasure and directing it toward service of Hashem. So take eating. Its purpose is sustenance. Hashem made it pleasurable, both as a motivation and as a means of connection. But when pleasure becomes the goal rather than the means, it undermines its own purpose. And then we, as a society, eat our way into heart disease and obesity, as is the case today. The same is true in the realm of sexuality. Like eating, it is designed with a dual purpose: to populate the world with people who will connect to Hashem and make his existence known, and to create deep connection within marriage, our training grounds for connection with Hashem. The pleasure, again, is there as both a motivator and a connector. But when society forgets the purpose and grabs the pleasure undermines the purpose. Instead of using sexuality to perpetuate knowledge of Hashem and for giving and connection, it's used for selfishness and self-absorption. So not only does the birth rate in the U.S. not replace itself, but the lack of moral boundaries leads to a breakdown in society and family structure and to loneliness and disconnection in the absence of committed relationships. Now, pleasure itself is not the problem. The problem is when pleasure is treated as an end rather than a means. Torah provides a framework that's the opposite of self-serving pleasure. Rav Shlomo Volba calls this the Olam HaYedidus, the world of connection. A world of Torah where nothing stands alone, where every action is either building relationship or creating disconnection. And mitzvos become the framework that transforms even physical life into something relational. This is the worldview Avram introduced to the world, and it's the worldview that the Jewish people were charged with carrying into Eretz Yisrael. And it was this worldview that Bilam opposed with all of his being. Bilam's credo of selfish pursuit of personal honor and pleasure was not confined to his personal affairs. His goal was not simply to curse the Jewish people, but to dismantle what they stood for. By severing their sense of commitment to morality and connection to Hashem in the incident of Baal Peor. That's where Pinchas comes in. And what's remarkable is not just what he did, but what it represents. Pinchas steps into a moment where everything is unraveling, and he reasserts the boundary that has been erased. He reintroduces relationship into a space where it had been abandoned. And the Torah calls the result a bris shalom, a covenant of peace, which sounds almost paradoxical, because how do you get peace through something that seems violent? And the answer is that peace is not the absence of tension. It is everything being aligned in its proper place under something higher. And that's what Pinchas restores. And that's why his reward is to become a Kohen, because Kohanim repair the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people by bringing offerings that restore closeness after distance. So Pinchas doesn't just stop a crisis, he becomes part of the ongoing repair system of that relationship going forward. With the immediate crisis addressed, the Torah turns its attention to the next stage of the nation's journey, preparing to enter Eretz Yisrael. And the first step is a new census. Like the census at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, this count reflects Hashem's enduring love for his people. Earlier, we had noted that counting in the Torah is not simply about numbers. To count something is to designate it, to assign its significance, and to reveal its role within a larger purpose, in this case, Hashem's mission for the Jewish people. But this census carries an additional message. The first census took place while the people were still in an ideal state of focus and alignment with Hashem's mission. This census comes later. The Jewish people have stumbled and experienced setbacks, but Hashem counts them once again. Sin may affect our circumstances, but it doesn't erase our mission. Several features of this census are particularly appropriate as the nation prepares to enter the land. One is the Torah's addition of the letters Hey and Yud to the names of the various families. So the family of Chanoch becomes Mishpachas HaChanochi, and so on throughout the census. Rashi explains that these letters testify to the moral purity of the Jewish families. By attaching his name to theirs, Hashem testifies that they are indeed the children of their fathers. As Rav Hirsch notes, this serves as a remarkable response to the events of Baal Peor. The immorality at Shittim was not representative of the nation's character. On the contrary, the ability to trace every family according to its paternal lineage demonstrates the moral integrity of the Jewish people throughout their years in Egypt and in the wilderness. This emphasis is particularly significant as they prepare to enter Eretz Yisrael. The land of Israel is intimately intertwined with the people's moral conduct. When the Torah lists prohibited relationships in Parshas Kedoshim, it immediately warns that immoral behavior can cause the land itself to expel its inhabitants. And so the census reinforces an important point. Despite the isolated failure at Shittim, the Jewish people remained faithful to the covenant of Abraham and to the message symbolized by Bris Milah. And that becomes more powerful when you realize where they're standing. They're now on the threshold of Eretz Yisrael, which means that everything is shifting. Up until now, they lived in a miraculous environment. Now, they're entering a world of agriculture, commerce, and military strength, where it becomes much easier to think, I did this, I earned this, I produced this. And that's why the Torah emphasizes the idea of schar ve'onesh, reward and punishment. Spiritual actions have practical consequences. What you do matters, and it shapes reality. That theme is reinforced by the way many individuals are mentioned throughout the census. Pinchas is highlighted for his action and his reward. Zimri is mentioned explicitly as a warning of moral collapse. Cusbi is named to show how deep the hatred of Midian went. Das and Aviram are remembered in the context of consequences. The daughters of Tzlafchad are highlighted for their love of Eretz Yisrael. Korach's sons are referenced in light of their tshuva. And later on, Yehoshua is singled out as the next leader for his faithfulness and dedication. The parsha concludes with the laws of the Korban Masaf, the additional offerings brought on Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and Yom Tovim. At first glance, this section seems disconnected from everything that precedes it, but it actually brings the parsha's themes full circle. The parsha began with Pinchas restoring the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. His reward was kahuna, priesthood, and the karbanos become the means through which that relationship could be maintained and repaired. But there's an even deeper connection. Earlier, we discussed the relationship between Abraham, Bris Milah, morality, and Eretz Yisrael. At the Bris Ben Absarim, the covenant of the pieces, when Hashem promised Eretz Yisrael to Abraham, he instructed him to take a series of animals that, as Rashi notes, correspond to the future karbanos. The message is profound. The covenant of Eretz Yisrael was linked from its inception to the karbanos, because karbanos provide a framework for maintaining and preserving the covenant. And the bris, the covenant, representing moral boundaries, serves to keep them in the land. As the Jewish people stand on the threshold of Eretz Yisrael, this is the lesson they must carry with them. They're about to enter a world of farming, commerce, family life, and nation building. The challenge will be to remember that all of those pursuits and all the pleasure and success that might come with them are meant to exist within the context of a relationship with Hashem. And that's the thread running through the entire parsha. Avram's worldview as opposed to Bilam's, the bris, the land, the act of Pinchas, and the karbanos that conclude the parsha all point toward the same idea. Life is not about pursuing pleasure, success, or fulfillment as ends in themselves. It's about using the gifts Hashem gives us as a means of creating connection with one another and ultimately with Hashem. It was their challenge to remember this, and it remains our challenge as well. When we think about the gifts we have, especially those that give us pleasure, whether it's money, belongings, good food, a nice home, are we thinking about how we can make ourselves more comfortable? Or can we make a conscious effort to think about how we can use those things for connection, both with others and with Hashem? Thank you for learning together.